Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week we'll hear about the SF Jazz Opera Parallel collaboration on Terence Blanchard's Champion, an opera. On the operatic front, also Opera San Jose's production of Carmen. In the chamber music front, the Valley of the Moon Music Festival's concert featuring the music of Schubert, and I'll be visiting with violinist-conductor Pinka Zuckerman, who is conducting and playing with the San Francisco Symphony tonight and Sunday. And regular contributor Peter Robinson will muse on the Valentine's Day holiday. Stay with us. Well, let's get things started with so many wonderful guests on Open Air this week. San Francisco's Opera Parallel and SF Jazz have collaborated for the first time for a new fully staged production of Champion, an opera in jazz, by five-time Grammy-winning New Orleans native Terence Blanchard, who is the SF Jazz resident artistic director. It's for 8 performances, the 19th through the 28th of this month at SF Jazz Center, and it's based on the life of African-American bisexual boxing champion Emile Griffith, who passed away in 2013. Here in studio to talk about the collaboration is Opera Parallel founder and artistic director Nicole Paimont, who has brought us some amazing innovative productions over the years, including last year's Dead Man Walking by Jake Heggie. Welcome back to you, Nicole.
Thank you.
She's joined by SF Jazz founder since 1983 and executive director Randall Klein, who has nurtured the launch of the San Francisco Jazz Center since its opening in January of 2013 and is still the only standalone facility built specifically for jazz in the United States. Great to finally have you in, Randall.
Great to be here, David.
Well, this is the result of SF Jazz's commitment to having a resident artistic director. Currently, that means Terence Blanchard, now in his second year. Randall, was bringing Champion to the stage an early part of the equation of engaging Terence Blanchard?
Interestingly, it wasn't. And so the resident artistic director program, we actually have 4 every 2 years. They have a 2-year term. It was to work with Terence. But shortly after we engaged Terence, I believe you came to me.
I did.
And said, "Would you ever thought about doing this piece?" And it took about, I'd say, .001 seconds to say, what a great idea, we should do that. I was well aware of the opera and its production done in St. Louis in 2013, and and the opportunity to do something like that at the center was like perfect for us. So, and the way that, you know, Nicole can talk a little bit about this, but adapting it to our space was part of the fun challenge of it, because we had designed the space to be very flexible, and the idea of being able to do an opera in there was something we would have hoped to have been done, but right. It wasn't actually one of the goals initially. But this was perfect, and it's going to be an innovative production that really utilizes the space well with a full operatic production.
I should say, Nicole, this fits right in with the mission and the very definition of Opera Parallel, working in parallel with other artists and organizations. Now, the libretto by Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Michael Christopher was premiered at Opera Theater of St. Louis in June of 2013, which was a collaboration with Jazz St. Louis. Now, how did you and Terence Blanchard reimagine this for Opera Parallel and the SF Jazz Center?
Well, I've known Terence for quite a while, because we did some concerts at the Monterey Jazz Festival when I first arrived in California, and we always enjoyed making music together. And actually, when I went to see Randall, I did not realize that he was in residence there. So it was really serendipity, and it was also, I think, a sign that we needed to do this project all together. Terence is actually a person that's very welcoming into when you engage with him. He's a very great collaborator, and so he loves to have new ideas. So when I talked to him about recreating the piece for this space, because we are doing it at the Jazz Center, there is not a pit, there is not a large, so we needed to have an orchestration that was different than what was done in St. Louis. And we also wanted to, you know, what's interesting about operas is that having a premiere is easier. Having a second production is often really hard, and that's what helps often an opera to survive. So we have become a little bit of an experts at doing second productions.
A chameleon of sorts. Right?
Yeah, and talking to the composer and seeing perhaps what needed to be changed from having the experience of a premiere and transforming it to really make it a successful piece. And I think what we've come up with this new orchestration that balances the voice well and that really fits in an original space is going to be very exciting for the audience.
Well, the motivating storyline is this tragic accidental death of Emile Griffith's opponent back in 1962, Benny Perret, during their bout for the welterweight title. And apparently Griffith spent his entire rest of his life questioning himself and a society that would accept his accidental killing of someone in the ring or as a result of that, but not his bisexuality. So how is that handled musically and on stage?
Well, first, you know, as Randall was saying, the SF Jazz Center is the perfect space just because, you know, the sets is a boxing ring, and as most of all San Francisco knows, the Jazz Center is actually in a circular formation. So the audience will really feel engaged. They're part of the sets. They're part of the experience, which is something we try to always include in our productions. So that being said, I think that Emile Griffith, I mean, the story is about so much more than the fact that he was a boxer. It's really about the human condition and about the fact that this man who was struggling with his sexuality, with his life experience, had to live with himself. And how does he go through that? And it's very timely, which is another great thing about what we try to do is bring relevance to opera.
Sure. There are athletes all around the world that are feeling more comfortable to finally come out of that closet.
Exactly. And we've actually had a few events where we've brought this conversation to the community with that. But I think the way that Terence does it is really in a very beautiful way because he's an African-American, comes from the Caribbean, comes to New York. Terence's language is so flexible and so malleable. You sort of see through the music. You could almost listen strictly to the piece without the words at first and know the story just about how Terence writes the whole story through his music. You know when you're in the Caribbean. You know when you're in the gay bar. You know when he's being hit by people. And you know when Emile Griffith actually kills Perret or makes him unconscious. He didn't really kill him. You know all through that through the score. You wouldn't need singers, actually, though the singers add a lot. You could. It would be a really interesting experience to just listen to the whole piece, just the orchestra, and then do it with the singers and the libretto.
That's Nicole Paimon, the artistic director of Opera Parallel, here with Randall Klein. Randall, both you and Nicole alluded to the army of forces that's being assembled to tell this story. I'm wondering if you could first speak about the creative team.
Well, Nicole can talk about the creative team. There's one thing I do want to add, actually, about the story and his killing Benny Perret in the ring. You know, what happened the day before the bout, which was at Madison Square Garden, was that Benny Perret taunted him at the weigh-in, you know, much as, you know, we see the theater of that still going on today.
Mm-hmm.
But he taunted him using a Cuban slang word, you know, for faggot, basically.
Uh-huh.
And he got very upset at the weigh-in, and he actually, attacked Benny Perret then. And so this pent-up anger that was there as part of this thing played out in the ring the next night in this fight. And so it it really just adds to the true tragic nature of this piece and how powerful a story it was, because his intent obviously was not to kill him in the ring, but boxing is a violent sport, and you know that you're to win is to knock somebody out, but not to win is not to kill somebody.
I've never understood the whole thing.
And it's very complicated.
Mm-hmm. But this is very interesting. There is one character, Howie, the coach, who actually has one moment in the opera where we go outside of Emil, and we actually have a little moment there of not a flashback, but actually telling a backstory of the fact that Perrette was actually not feeling well for a few days, that had complaints about headaches and not feeling well, and did not really want to fight that fight. Mm. But he did, because, you know, it's showbiz.
Right,
and
right.
So people also say, well, did he really, was Griffith really responsible for his death, or was he? So there's a moment in the opera where we question that. It's a gorgeous aria.
Mm.
You asked about the cast. We're very, very lucky because Emil Griffith is presented with three characters, and depending on what time of his life, we have the little Emil Griffith, which are two young boys, and then we have a young Emil, two, because we double casted the little boy.
Right.
Then young Emil is Kenneth Kellogg, and then old Emil is what
Arthur Woodley,
and Arthur premiered the work in St. Louis.
Fantastic.
And is just a beautiful, beautiful protagonist for this.
And that's just a small element of the cast, which also includes a gospel chorus that's acting as reporters, hat makers, mm-hmm. men at the boxing gym.
Yeah, you have a huge chorus, you have a big orchestra, and then you have a lovely jazz quartet in the middle of this orchestra that gives the traditional orchestral sound a completely different color. So it's a big group of people in that space.
Well, we'll have to have a taste of that music, and you can make it between now and the 28th, or the 19th to the 28th, SF Jazz Center, sfjazz.org, Opera Parallel, and SF Jazz collaboration on the story of Emil Griffith, an opera and jazz champion, running through the 28th. Again, information at sfjazz.org. Thank you so much for coming in. Great to see you again, Nicole. Let's spend a little bit more time next time. Randall, I'd love to hear about more of the things happening at SF Jazz, and it's been a wonderful addition to the landscape here.
Thank you,
Thank
David.
You.
Well, from the boxing ring to the bull ring, for a true operatic classic being staged down San Jose way. Georges Bizet's 1875 opera, Carmen, will be sung in French with English supertitles. Six performances are scheduled from this Saturday through the 28th at the California Theater in downtown San Jose, in a production of Opera San Jose conducted by its music director, Joseph Marchesio. Resident tenor Kirk Dougherty will sing the role of Don Jose, which he did last season to great acclaim at Anchorage Opera, and for all but the two final performances here in San Jose, which will be sung by tenor John Lindsay. Mr. Dougherty recently sang the roles of Cavaradossi in Tosca, Tamino in The Magic Flute, and Philip Harrington in the world premiere of Where Angels Fear to Tread, and will be Mitch in A Streetcar Named Desire later this season at Opera San Jose. Kirk, join me in studio. Welcome.
Hi.
Good to be here.
He's joined by soprano Jennifer Forney, who returns to Opera San Jose to perform the role of Micaela, a role she performed to critical acclaim in Portland Opera, where she'll return next season as Tatanya in Tchaikovsky's Eugene Onegin. She joined the Opera San Jose Resident Ensemble during the 13-14 season and appeared as Alice Ford in Falstaff, Cho-Cho-San in Madame Butterfly, and Donna Anna in Don Giovanni. Recent engagements for Miss Forney include the role of Anna and Vile's street scene with Springfield Opera last season. A very warm welcome to you, Jennifer.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we could easily spend our brief time together talking inside baseball inside opera as musicians, all who are very familiar with the story of Carmen and the memorable music of Georges Bizet. But now, for the opera novice that might be listening, perhaps you could describe your character, each of you, and what happens in the course of the opera to him and her. Let's start with Micaela, sung by Jennifer.
Okay, well, my character is kind of the classic ingenue type in a way. She is in love with Don José. They grew up together. She has nothing but good intentions. And she comes to, in the first act, to give him a letter from his mother, basically requesting that he marry me, from the mother, not me. but I'm very excited about the letter. And then, unfortunately, he chooses to go a different route. And in Act 3, I come back months later, climbing up a mountain to find him and bring him home to his mother, who is dying. And by that point, he's a very different man than I met in Act 1.
Ah, indeed. Mm-hmm. And how about you, Kirk, who's singing Don José?
Yes, Don José is an interesting character. He goes through a lot of changes and a series of rather bad decisions brought about by meeting a woman while he was in the Spanish Dragoons, and he meets this woman, Carmen. Yes, this amazing, beautiful, but not just physically beautiful woman, a gypsy, a free spirit, a woman who transcends her surroundings and brings him to a series of crises and leads him to decisions that he wouldn't normally make. The character would probably, had he not met this woman, married Micaela, mm-hmm. returned to his homeland. He's Basque by birth. He's an outsider in these dragoons, but so is Carmen. And I think the empathy they share causes him to let her escape from jail after she's committed an assault on another cigarette girl. And from that decision comes all sorts of other turns that lead him to becoming a gypsy and, in the end, making a very fateful decision.
Well, all of this stuff makes for incredible opera, but it's hard to believe that this, when it was first performed at the Opera Comique back in 1875, was not well received. This storyline now, the storyline for the most part is
very modern,
but yes. It would probably be banned because of the cigarettes.
Yes. Too true.
and it actually wasn't until Bizet died after the 33rd performance or so of the opera, and he didn't realize what a tremendous success it would have been if he had witnessed the Vienna production. And then has it ever been out of the repertoire since then? I don't think so.
Not really. No, it is. It is amazing. It's lasted long and in many versions. In this version, for instance, it is sung in French with the subtitles, but we also have, rather than recitatives, which were common in Italian opera, we will use the spoken dialogue in French, like the Comédie Française version.
Mm-hmm. We don't have you two singing this first act duet, but could you maybe explain what we'll hear Roberto Alagna and Inva Mula sing?
This is beautiful. This is it's a really beautiful moment in the opera where our two characters come together, and I'm his reminiscent of the past. You know, I'm coming from his hometown, which he hasn't been to in a few years, and I bring this letter from his mother, and I talk about our time together, his mother and I talking about what she wants for him. And I say, you know, she forgives you, she loves you, she thinks about you, and it really touches him, and he talks about how he desires those memories. And you know.
Mm-hmm. Music from Carmen, and then more with Kirk Dougherty and Jennifer Forney.
Et puis, et prise encore une autre chose.
Don Jose. Your mama loves you. She really does.
It's
really
totally does. True.
On that recording, we heard Roberto Alagna and Inva Mula. Kirk Dougherty and Jennifer Forney will be in the Opera San Jose production. Also in the cast, mezzo-soprano Lisa Chavez returning as the eponymous Carmen. Resident baritone Matthew Hanscom is also in the cast, which also includes sopranos Christine Capsudo and Sibel Gouverneur, Michael Boley, baritone Eugene Brancovenio, who I've had here on Open Air, a good friend, as well as basses Kirk Eichelberger and Daniel Chili, I believe is his name. Yeah. Conducted by Joseph Marchesio, Opera San Jose's music director and principal conductor. He most recently conducted Tosca and has conducted some 15 productions for Opera San Jose. General Director Larry Hancock will present free 45-minute talks to ticket holders about the opera at the California Theater down in San Jose before each performance. And I need to give a shout-out to my good friend Isabel Chapuis, who is principal flutist of the wonderful Opera San Jose Orchestra. As a flutist, I need to emphasize the love and what an incredible score to play.
Oh, they sound incredible, too. The orchestra sounds fantastic.
Well, Kirk, we don't have you singing this wonderful La Fleur que tu m'avais jeté, but I do have Mr. Not-too-shabby guy, Placido Domingo. What is he singing? This is a flower that he's held on to when he went to prison.
That's right, yeah. When he let Carmen escape, he was taken in lieu of her to jail for a month. And during that time, he waited with the flower that she had given him in the first act and pondered what led him to that decision. And it's this withered flower that he holds in his hand to show Carmen how much he really cares, has been thinking about her, and loves her.
Next time we have you on Open Air, we'll look for your CD of that recording. Kirk,
thank you.
Kirk Dougherty here with Jennifer Forney. They'll be starring in Opera San Jose's production of Carmen. Thanks for coming in, both of you.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Placido Domingo singing that aria La Fleur que tu m'avais jeté from Act 2 of Carmen. Carmen being done down at Opera San Jose. Information at operasj.org this Saturday through the 28th. Still to come this hour, a talk with Pinka Zukerman, who is here with the San Francisco Symphony for a couple of concerts. And Peter Robinson muses on the Valentine's Day holiday. But the Green Music Center's intimate 240-seat Schroeder Hall at Sonoma State University is the venue for the second of three winter concerts by artists with Valley of the Moon Music Festival. Their earlier concert in January and the music of Schumann sounded something like this. That's Eric Zivian on forte piano with Tanya Tompkins on cello for the music of Robert Schumann, a brief excerpt from his trio number 3 in G minor, which was part of their concert back in January at the Schroeder Hall, Sonoma State University. They join me in studio to talk about this upcoming concert, which focuses on the music of Franz Schubert. They'll also be performing on cello and forte piano, respectively, for this concert, joined by soprano Christine Brandes, violinists Elizabeth Blumenstock and Axel Strauss, as well as double bassist Michael Taddei. Very warm welcome to you, Tanya and Eric.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
Well, let's first talk about the genesis of Valley of the Moon Music Festival, the mission of the organization, and why is it called Valley of the Moon? Does it have something to do with Sonoma?
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that, but the area around Sonoma is referred to as the Valley of the Moon. And in fact, Jack London wrote a novel called The Valley of the Moon that we started reading. It's actually a really good novel, but a bit politically incorrect, so I'm not sure everybody would like it. But we, Eric and I, live together. We've lived together for about 16 years, and we've played a lot of this kind of classical and romantic chamber music together, both on modern instruments, and then about 10 years ago, we started exploring it on original instruments by purchasing a gorgeous original forte piano that you just heard on that Schumann recording from 1841. It's originally from Vienna, but it was restored in the Netherlands. And we brought it over to California, and we started using it on with, you know, playing composers like Mendelssohn, Schumann, Schubert, and just became so enamored with the sound of chamber music.
Well, I figured that Sonoma didn't have their own forte piano, did they?
No.
We'll be bringing our Rausch forte piano that Tanya was just describing. It'll be being moved up there for the concert and tune, especially because it does go out of tune. The old pianos were made differently. They weren't made with a big steel frame, and so they go out of tune a little more frequently. And they sound totally, because they were made earlier, they sound totally different. They blend better with the strings. They're quieter.
More suitable for a smaller hall as well.
Also, yes, and that's the kind of hall, that's the kind of biggest place that some of these pieces would have been played in the early 19th century.
Well, Eric, we have an example of you playing some Chopin. Maybe you can tell us what to listen for in this very brief excerpt of Chopin that we won't hear on a full Steinway grand.
I think what you can hear is the instrument is very articulate. It sounds almost, at times it might sound almost more like a harp than a piano. And you can hear every note, you can still hear the wash of sound that Chopin was after at the same time. And I think that's hard to get in the modern piano, both this beautiful sound and yet the clarity of every single note.
And then more with Eric Zivian and Tanya Tompkins about the music Valley of the Moon Music Festival. the much more intimate sound of Eric Zivian performing the music of Chopin. You can definitely hear in the upper register, especially, that harp-like quality you were alluding to, Eric.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, the upper register especially is just very articulate that way. And I think the bass register has kind of got a depth that a lot of modern pianos just don't have.
Well, a Schubertiade is in store for folks on this coming Saturday at 3 o'clock. Tanya, could you perhaps enlighten people as to what that means? What is a Schubertiade?
Well, it's become known as just a whole concert of Schubert, which is actually what we're doing. Historically, Schubert had a group of wonderful friends that he was very attached to, and they would get together like every other night and drink together, talk about intellectual ideas, philosophy, literature, music, and he was really attached to these friends. They inspired him a lot to write his music and just for his well-being. And they started referring to those as Schubertiades because he was sort of the leading figure of that group.
One of the featured works, and I guess we'd call it the showcase work on this Saturday's concert, is the wonderful Trout Quintet. We have two examples for people to compare and contrast to, one a modern version, and then we'll hear a version that you brought of the Trout Quintet part of it on original instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we'll hear more about this particular concert of the Schubertiade this coming Saturday. Music of Schubert first on modern instruments, the Trout Quintet, and then segueing into original instruments. The Trout, the Trout, the Trout by Franz Schubert, part of his quintet, as we just heard on modern instruments and there on original instruments. Yes, a much more intimate sound, isn't it?
Exactly. It's, yeah.
Tanya Tompkins is playing cello in that performance, or will be in that performance this coming Saturday in a program called Schubertiade. This program, again, on instruments that are intended by the composer.
Exactly.
Why is that important to you?
Well, maybe you can hear a little bit in those two examples. As a string player, it is so fun to play with a forte piano because when you play with a modern Steinway, mostly you have to just play as loud as you can to be heard, and that changes the whole way that you phrase music. It changes your whole palette of colors. And I feel like you have a lot more colors available when you don't have to be so concerned with volume. So that's one thing. And all the string players will be using gut strings and then playing with this historically accurate piano. I think it just gives a lot more possibility for doing subtleties.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, you prefer modern instruments or the original instrument in general when you're practicing?
I'd love to play both on modern and old instruments. When I'm playing the old music, I definitely prefer to play it on the old instruments a little bit, but I am happy to play it on modern instruments as well. And in fact, part of the joy of playing it on the old instruments is then you can go back to modern instruments and you hear the sound a little bit of the kind of instrument that the composer wrote it for, and then that helps you really play it on modern piano in a different way. So I like to do it in both.
One thing that we have in the summer at our summer festival in Sonoma from July 16th to July 31st is an apprentice program. And we have emerging artists come that we play with and we coach them. And we teach them how to look at this period of music from a historic perspective. And then sometimes they will go back and just play on modern instruments again, but they'll have a new view of this music. And I think it's really nice for them to discover that with us. We had a lot of fun last summer.
And that's really the main event of the Valley of the Moon Festival from July 17th to the 31st. Another concert after this coming Saturday will be in March featuring the music of Beethoven.
Exactly.
Information for tickets for these concerts and others, gmc.sonoma.edu. And if you'd like some information on what Tanya's up to, go to her website, tanyatompkins.com. Eric, do you have a website that you can promote for us?
Well, I think we should also let you know the website for the Valley of the Moon.
Please do.
Music Festival, www.valleyofthemoonmusicfestival.org. And then if you look up my name, Eric Zivian, I have a website that has some things on there too.
Great. Well, thanks so much for coming in today, and we'll have you again for the upcoming concerts or perhaps the summer festival.
Thanks so much.
Violinist-conductor Pinka Zukerman is in town to conduct and play violin with the San Francisco Symphony. Concerts are tonight and this Sunday. I caught up with him after a rehearsal the other day at Davies Symphony Hall. In the background, you might hear a children's concert that was being rehearsed, but, you know, enjoy the extra little extracurricular sound, shall we say. Maestro Zukerman, welcome once again to Open Air.
Pleasure.
In a recent interview, you mentioned that music takes a great deal of your time, that you're always working at it. Yep. I'm wondering if there comes a point at the age of 67 where it's easier for you, where you can let it just flow.
It's only easy if you really use the appropriate time during the day, every day, to really understand more of what you're doing. In my case, I not only study the scores, of course, but I have to practice. You practice every day. The hands are in good shape. Your physical being is in good shape. Everything that you do has a direction. That's what music does. And because I've been doing it for so many years, sometimes it's easier than others, but it's never easy. It shouldn't be. If it is easy, that means you're faking.
I remember trying to explain to a friend back in high school, saying, I've got to go practice my flute. I said, what do you mean? Why do you have to go practice? You already sound good. You can play well.
Well, it's like sports. You know, you have to keep in shape. And it's a muscular activity that the fingers have to do. And I don't speak of the fingers, but your whole being, your shoulders, your back, your legs. I don't go into histrionics as far as going into clubs and gyms and things to work out, but I do loosen up. To play properly.
And music is something that gives such satisfaction, yet there's never, I think, a moment of being completely fulfilled. There's always something more you can learn from it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Music is in everything. We have music when we go to funerals. We have music when we have weddings. We have music when we go to bar mitzvahs. We have music. Music is a nonstop 24-hour I think activity that the brain takes in. We know it, of course, and it doesn't matter what kind of music. It could be Lady Gaga to Elvis Presley to the Beatles to yesterday's rocks guys. I think music is there all the time, and it's been proven that the brain works better if all that functions with music. Everything, concept thinking, geometry, languages, etc.
Well, I'm reminded, too, of a comment that Joni Mitchell made about the performing arts being different from, say, the visual arts, in that during a concert recording that was done live while she's tuning her guitar, the audience is saying, hey, do Both Sides Now, do Big Yellow Taxi, do something like that. And she made the comment, you know, that's what the difference between performing and visual arts, that no one went up to Van Gogh and said, hey, paint a stormy night again.
But you know, the great painters went in the morning to the beach and went in the afternoon to the beach, let's say, or to a garden, because it's a different reflection of the sun. And I think we can do that and provide that as well with music, major, minor keys, for example. So music is one of those, I think, aspects that brings all of it together. It's complete. Music is complete. But the great, great works of art, the great works, obviously in written form, they all involve musical rhythms as well. And so this is all very important, for especially for youngsters. And I must say that at this point, I'm trying to advocate mandatory music back in the schools. And I hope we do that in America soon. I hope we have new administrations that understands that without the arts, we will have a desert, a cultural desert. We have, unfortunately, lost a bit of time now with the newest generations that's coming into the workplace. They just don't know what it is to listen to music anymore, any music. They do SMSs, you know, and texts and all that. There's no sound there. There has to be sound. Sound is the most elementary, basic way of communicating to each other. Mm-hmm. And it starts from the day we breathe, the minute we know there's a sound there, there's a sound of our mother's heart, etc. So these are all very important aspects, I think, that we need to bring back to society.
You're a very important part of your career and your advocacy of music is working with young people and the next generation of musicians. You'll be making a visit nearby to the San Francisco Conservatory of Music to give a master class. I think safe to say that you've witnessed and nurtured a couple of generations already of young musicians.
And I hope, David, I hope to continue doing it.
Well, I'm wondering, as you mentioned, with younger people in their 30s now not having music in their life, are you seeing in the students that you work with, either in private or in masterclass situations, a difference in the way that technology is either helping or hindering their development? We talked a little bit off mic about how technology is going to help us in the concert hall, but what about for what is absolutely elemental? There's nothing getting around practice, practice, practice.
Well, I think the technology itself is become so wonderful and immediate. Some of it is good and some of it is not. I think when we come to sound, we need to not only hear it, but we need to know how it's produced. And I think technology can do that for us a lot. It can show us how to do it. But you inevitably have to meet the person face to face. It's wonderful to see them on the screen, to teach them, to work with them. It's tenfold, literally. I've been doing it for over 20 years now. The information is extraordinary, but you can't just put XOXO and expect them to play in tune. It doesn't work. So I always tell the students in Ottawa during our seminar that, God, give me a hug and then put XOXO after that. No problem. But I want to know who you are. It's not enough for me to just know that you write beautifully on a text. I need to know who you are. And that works then. Then technology actually climbs to a new height, I think, in understanding between us. And it's just getting better and better. So we will have the kind of, I think in the next 20 years, we will have the kind of operandi that are so immediate. We have it already with that Mac watch, but we don't have yet sound on there. We do, but it's not good enough for music. But it will be there.
I was speaking earlier of Joni Mitchell, and speaking of Canadians, you must have an honorary citizenship by this point. 17 years now with the National Arts Center Orchestra in Ottawa. Are you still visiting then as a regular guest?
Oh yeah, I'm director of the Summer Music Institute and conductor emeritus, for whatever that means. And we still have our homes in Ottawa, of course. We go there quite frequently. This past November, we did a recording of. We did a Brahms double and a Fourth Symphony one recording, and then the other one we did as a Baroque program. So, yeah.
That with Amanda Forsyth, the double concerto.
Yeah, the double concerto is with Amanda. She also plays on the Baroque program. I play with our oboe player. We're doing the double. There's a whole Baroque thing, Baroque concertos and things, Bach suite. Sort of to put that on tape is sort of my legacy, I guess. It's a great country for music. It still is. But we need to support, again, the school systems to bring more music to First Nations people, for example. Send out 50,000 a year. Send out 50,000 recorders every year to every kid in Canada. Or for that matter, any place else. In America, we'll just have to quadruple that. That's all. But it's not so hard. Go to Yamaha and say, send us those little instruments. Because once you have a 4-year-old, 5-year-old has a recorder in their hand, it's theirs. They can make sounds, and that's very important.
I mean, they're plastic, for gosh sake. They're easy enough to make.
Sure, and they're indestructible. So, yeah.
Well, a nicer place to visit in February here in San Francisco, though, than Ottawa, I imagine.
Well, it can get very cold.
You mentioned that a new recording of the Brahms and the double concerto with Amanda, a live recording that you did. I'm wondering if you have a preference for live recordings versus what you can get done in a studio.
In a way, I do. I have done quite a bit of it. We do have a makeup session. It's not just the recording, but I would say at least 35, maybe 40% of the actual performance is from the concert. We do need to have, we're not automats, we need to reconsider some passages sometimes, and that's good to have a makeup session. So it's all very good that way. But the performance is the performance of the concert. It's not a studio performance.
You just came off a rather extensive tour here in the U.S. with the Royal Philharmonic, for which you've been principal guest conductor since 2009. Elgar on the program for a lot of those concerts. I'm wondering if you had to do something special with the San Francisco Symphony musicians to get them to play like Englishmen. Did you offer some tea and crumpets at the break or something?
Good idea. I would give them some tea and crumpets. Well, to play Elgar, to understand Elgar, I should say, and to really hear the proper sounds, one needs to spend some time in England itself. I don't dwell on that, but I think it's a good idea to have a little visit up to Malvern, let's say, up in Yorkshire, to see Elgar's house, just to see the light, to hear the rustling of the grass, to see their affection for that music. There's something very unique about, and the dedicated aspect of their belief in the music. The belief in Elgar is practically, if not more so, than even Beethoven, I would say, in Bonn or in Berlin. It's quite wonderful. It's an extraordinary experience to have had and keep having with them playing Enigma, for example. It's just an extraordinary experience. I told them many times how privileged I am to stand in front of them, to hear them play like that. It's phenomenal. And they just do it. I've asked them, actually, how do you do it? So I can tell other people. They said, we just do it.
Well, we look forward to hearing what you've done with the San Francisco Symphony musicians, not only for the Elgar, but for the Mozart end of the program. And so looking forward to your next visit to the Bay Area.
Thanks very much, David.
Pinka Zukerman recorded at Davies Symphony Hall, performing music of Mozart, the Symphony No. 39, including also the Hofner Serenade. Concerts are this evening at 8 o'clock and this Sunday at 2 p.m. Here's an excerpt from Zukerman conducting the Royal Philharmonic and the slow movement of Elgar's Serenade for Strings. Foreshadowing, perhaps, the great Nimrod variation. That's the slow movement from Elgar's Serenade for Strings. Again, tonight's concert is at 8, Sunday's is at 2 at Davies Symphony Hall. Peter Robinson standing by for a little bit of talk about what's coming up this Sunday as well.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V
is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore can
P love. Is for Peter Robinson.
Well, you did it, David. I was wondering.
It's for Elgar.
How can we transition, I said to myself, from what took me back to the Royal Albert Hall, but in fact it wasn't, an Elgar, to Nat King Cole and the magic of the keyboard. But we did it anyway.
Welcome back.
So Sunday is indeed St. Valentine's Day and a host of activities. But if you're preparing for St. Valentine's Day, I've just got a few suggestions for this particular year. I'm going to start off in Sausalito. There's a new venue which has just opened. It opened about 3 months ago. It's called Harmonia. Harmonia is a great name, I think, for what it offers. And on February the 12th in the evening, they're having a love fest. This is a mixer for singles to put their best foot out, put on a happy face, and see what really rocks and rolls in Marin. Now, when you finish the rock and roll at Harmonia on the Saturday, that's the 13th at noon, there is a love meditation. So you can go from the rhythm into the soul, into the body. And then if that's not enough for you, finally, on the 14th, there is a opportunity as couples for yoga and Thai massage. So as I say, welcome to Marin for some of the happenings that just bring out the V in St. Valentine's Day. And I think it was Kierkegaard who said, don't forget to love yourself. And of course, I think he could well have fitted in nicely in Marin. Benjamin Franklin, on the other hand, says he that falls in love with himself has no rivals, and that too offers a different opportunity. Now, to find out about these activities at Harmonia, let me give you a phone number. It's 415-332-1432. That's Harmonia. It's just off the beginning or the end section of Sausalito, opposite the Bay Model, and they will give you directions and give you the times for the different activities. Now, for something totally different, for book lovers, Valentine's Day offers an opportunity for a book swap at Book Passage. And what you have to do here is choose your favorite love story, bring it in, and look for an exchange. So that's a different type of Valentine's Day, and that is on February the 12th at 5:30 at Book Passage in Corte Madeira. If you're here in the city, a different way of seeing San Francisco is on board a Hornblower cruise. You leave from just beyond the Embarcadero. Things will have quietened down by now. And if you want to leave your heart in San Francisco, leave it in the bay, that's an ideal place to go. A movie for a movie lover, highly recommended, just came out at the end of last year, is Brooklyn. A great movie, story about an immigrant love coming from Ireland, meeting her match in Brooklyn, Italian, going back to Ireland and then returning. A story which will really warm your heart.
Great film.
And if you're looking for a special Valentine dinner, Insulato at San Anselmo has a special menu just for Valentine diners. And finally, I know you're going to mention it, for music lovers, the Mozart Symphony is playing on Sunday here at the San Francisco Hall.
That's right. It's Mozart's 39th Symphony, conducted by Pinka Zukerman, who we just heard from, along with the Elgar Serenade for Strings and Mozart's Hofner Serenade. Peter, I should mention that especially for Valentine's Day, the Symphony has a special program called Symphony Lux, where if you purchase a package, you will include premium box seats, dinner, and a private car service for that matinee performance on the 2nd on Valentine's Day. That sounds like a treat for your special someone. Information at sfsymphony.org/lux, L-U-X.
Well, I've also done a little bit of research based on a 2015 survey and found some interesting facts about the nature of Valentine's Day. For example, 3% of pet owners send their pet a Valentine's card, so look out for those. The highest recipient of humans getting them turns out to be teachers. So remember your teacher on St. Valentine's Day, because you may help with your grade. When it comes to purchasing flowers, 73% of flowers are purchased by men, and that is all done in the 5 days before. So some thinking goes into this. And I think another interesting thing is wedding proposals. Some 200,000 wedding proposals. Now, whether they follow through are also carried out on St. Valentine's Day. So this gave me some thinking about just around the nature of the feast and just a couple of things which surprised me. I heard a lady outside the Victoria's Secret store in Union Square just remark. She said, "If love is blind, why is lingerie so popular?" And that immediately made me raise my own eyebrow to think about how indeed the situation happens, because often it begins not only just with a trance of lovers, but a rush of feelings and a blush of encounters, a flush of cheeks, and then a crush of hugs, and then finally comes the love letter. But it did leave me with one question: how indeed does it all end? And on that question, I'm going to leave it to you to discover. Happy St. Valentine's Day.
Thank you, Peter. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Open Air is produced by Niels Swinkels. I'm David Latulippe, your host. Send me a comment about today's or any other show at david@kalw.org. And a reminder that all of our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than any one that you adore can love, is all that I can give to you. Love is more than just a game for two. Two in love can make it. Take my heart and please don't break it. Love was made for me and you. Love was made for me and love was made for me and you.